One fellow, Gene Moore, led to Christ. So we're dipped out for about 6 months, but at the beginning of the next year, he's in hitting it strong. And the reason was the guy had that in his mind, and he didn't quit being friendly with him and occasionally trying to see him and all. He wasn't doing all the follow-up because the guy wasn't responding, but he just kept in touch casually without taking a lot of his time from the ministry. And when the fellow came around, we prayed for him, and then here he's going again. I went to this rally, man, what are you doing here? Haven't seen you for a long time. But that's good. And the result of that was we conserved a lot of the fruit of our evangelism.
Could you give me an idea of how much percentage of your time you spend in recruiting and how much in just winning people to the Lord and developing them?
Well, I think it depends on what your job is. You know, like, it depends on whether, you know, you're a contact point or an area representative or a director, what percentage of the time is. But one thing I would say is a general principle. For anybody who's out, you know, in the area ministry, any representative, contact point or representative, the danger, and this is what Leroy is talking about, see, to get this thing working, you have to have training going at all four levels all the time. And what happens is that we tend to get on one kick and we get real strong on this and then we start neglecting this. And we've got to mature and enlarge our capacity so we can keep all four of these things going so that, you know, if you're real strong here in witnessing and getting disciples, that you keep a strong disciple, training disciple makers, training PARs, but you keep all this just as strong. Here again, this was a lesson I learned down in New Zealand, Australia. I mean, it came home very strong because in the university setup down in New Zealand, Australia, it's a little bit different than here. Here we go sort of pretty much 9 months and then even, so we go to training programs this summer, but there is summer school even some places. Well, down there in the university setup, first, there are very few living in the dorms, and secondly, everything shuts down in the summer. So you just got, there's nothing going in the summer. They don't even have classes in the summer. And then the terms, the way it's worked, is that at the end of the year, they have about a month and a half that's exam period. And they take a subject, like they have, say, four or five subjects for the year. They go all year, and then they have this big exam in each subject at the end of the year. And what they do on that exam is their mark for the course for the year. So during that last part, during exam period, you know, that's pretty hard to do much. And what happened is we started counting up the number of weeks that the students were actually on campus. See, they weren't living in dorms and they weren't there in the summer and they were taking exams. And on an average university, it was 26 weeks. Now I thought about that. You know, that's only 6 months. That's only half the year. And the thought that occurred to me is I can't afford to take the first couple of terms and just do evangelism and not do any follow-up, and then just do follow-up and not do evangelism, is if I've only got 26 weeks, I've got to do both all the time as hard as I can and also try to keep in touch with them during the breaks. And so the first thing we did is try to keep the whole ministry going 26 weeks on campus, and the second thing we were working on is how to stretch that out to 52 weeks. So how we could follow up a person when they were home. And let me give you one illustration, then it'll be time for a call break, of how this worked out. I was talking to Merv Chan about the fellas. See, I took my notebook around, more to Merv Chan's area. Now, Merv Chan was a representative, but he was responsible for him. He lived about a five-minute drive from my house. I was praying about what I should do, and it occurred to me that if Merv Chan had a ministry up in Brisbane, you know, 400 or 500 miles away, what would I do? Well, I'd go up there, you know, to get involved in his ministry. I'd spend 2 or 3 days probably living with him, just going around getting involved in his ministry so I could see the real thing, see? Because I can't help him unless I am involved in the real thing. If it's something special, I mean, there's time for something special, but I don't see the real thing. If I'm going to really help him, I've got to help him in the real thing. So I said, nothing special, just do what you normally do. You know, if you're doing nothing good, well, I can always do nothing. I'll do nothing with you. Don't say anything special for me. And then the thought occurred to me, but he doesn't live in Brisbane. He lives 5 minutes away. And while I was doing, I'd talk to him on the phone. I'd drive over and see him for an afternoon. I'd go down lunchtime. If he's Brisbane, I'd go live with him. So you know what I did the next time it came time to go over to Merv Chan? I said, I'm going to come over and live with you. So I packed my suitcase. Georgette drove me over the five-minute drive. And I lived with him for 3 days. Everybody thought it sort of started, how stupid. And 5 minutes away, you're going. And I'll tell you, I got more done in 3 days there than I had done in 3 months, just talking to him on the phone and this type of thing. Well, what did I do when I got there? Well, I whipped out my notebook, and, you know, objectives, activities, checklists on disciple makers and all. And I talked about, okay, Robert Fu, is he a disciple maker yet? Well, I had a little thing here, you know, how he's doing. There's one thing he was missing was raising up another disciple. Well, who's he got? And he told me, well, he had this fella, Raymond, and he was about to book five, you know, and let's say that every other area he was about that same level. In other words, he was sort of two-thirds or three-fourths of the way there. But what happened is that Robert moved out of, he finished university, moved over to the business area, and Raymond left town and went down 60 miles away to university in another city. Murr said, well, you know, sort of, he was doing all right, and Raymond was doing well, but now we're trying to get him somebody else. Well, that was no problem because Robert could do some, you know, do with some other fellows. I said, let's think a bit about Raymond. Now, what's Robert doing to finish helping Raymond become a disciple? I hadn't thought about that. I mean, they'd thought about it, but Raymond was 60 miles away. They couldn't really do anything. And I said, well, why can't he? Can Raymond do Bible study down there? He said, well, you know, he can't be in a Bible study group. I said, you know, the profile doesn't say anything about you have to be in a Bible study group. The profile says that you have to have a hunger for the Word and you have to have done some Bible study. I said, is there anything that Robert could do to help Raymond accomplish his Bible study? Murph said, well, yeah, I suppose he could. I suppose he could, you know, write to him and all. Well, you know what happened out of that is that Robert started writing to him, giving him assignments. And I noticed that on his break, he had a week off that Robert invited Raymond to come up, and they lived in Robert's flat for a week. He was, you know, going over this stuff, checking out his Bible studies, giving him some assignments to hold him for the next month when he wouldn't see him. Well, now, I agree that, you know, he might not become a disciple as fast under those conditions, but I believe that he can become a disciple. And sure enough, well, I haven't checked the I left about that time, but it's interesting to me that then later, Merv had another fella, and he was listing the guys and he had in the city business area, but he also had two guys down that were almost disciples that were 1,500 miles away, back in his old hometown. Well, he was discipling them, but you know what he was doing? One of them, he'd send him tapes back and forth. Occasionally, if he didn't hear from him, he'd call him up on the telephone. And this guy, you know, it says being involved in navigator activities where practicable. Well, he wasn't in on every Saturday night rally, you know, 1,500 miles away. But, you know, he and his wife came all the way down 1,500 miles for a weekend conference. Oh, you know, well, that tells me something. Now, it's true that it may take that fellow rather than 6 months or a year or a year and a half. It'd been going on 3 years. You know, and it wasn't all just rosy. I mean, you know how it is. You know, you work and help and work this out. But the fact is, he was becoming a disciple. And the fellow that was helping him was becoming a disciple maker. Now, with him, of course, we want him to also make disciples in his local ministry, which he was doing as well. But when we're thinking about our objectives and getting it clear, then what happens is we have a little bit more creativity and initiative and are able to come up with new and different activities that help us accomplish the objectives. Here again, you know, talking about Satan switching things around, it's very easy to switch this around. We've got this program. And then I think, you know, I've got this program going. What objectives could I have that would fit in with my program? Well, it sounds funny, but, you know, it's that easy to do. Why do you have a Bible study group? Why do you, And this helps us to get a clear look at really where we're headed and coming up not only with some of the tried and proven activities that we want to maintain, but also enables us to create some new ones that help us stay on target and meet our objective.
Could I comment to Dick's question about how much time we put on each of these? I don't think I know the answer to that, but I do have a thought. And that is, for the next while, next year or whatever, I want the focal point, as you call it, to be on that third circle, because we do have lots of people that are meeting that ND profile. And we must move them across that line and get them done and get them fully qualified DMs. But the thing that I have seen that has always scared me and sent chills up my backbone right now is that I've watched that happen. And what happens is when you concentrate there and leave off the other top two, first the thing becomes mechanical, then your area grows cold, and then your area grows sterile. And you've got a cold, mechanical, sterile thing going, which just terrifies me. And we mustn't let that happen. So even though the focal point is on that DM thing, boy, the overtone, the heartbeat of it all has got to be up in that thing where we continue to do that. But what we're trying to do now is bring a focal point into the Western Division, and that's that third circle.
Okay, could I make one just quick comment how some of this fits in to accomplishing what you've said? And Jack's going to be talking about man-to-man. And there's a time where, man-to-man is like every Thursday from 3 to 5 in the afternoon or something. But if we have this in our mind in terms of really what we're trying to accomplish, and let me clarify, we talk about objectives. I'll be talking about two ways, one in terms of overall area objectives and then training objectives, which apply to a specific person. But in terms of a training objective for a man, what it does, rather than getting set on the man-to-man is 3 to 5 every Thursday afternoon, see, that's an activity and a timetable thing. But if I'm on the objective of what is the training objective I'm trying to accomplish, what I will do is I'll look at that, and it could be that he's a little bit weak in really knowing how to present the gospel. So I don't just end up in his room Thursday 3 to 5 and say, well, you know, let's talk about whatever. You know, sort of scratch my head the day before and say, now, what should I cover today? But I've identified what his real need is, and then I've figured out what's the best way to help him meet that need. And if it's witnessing, maybe the best way is get out and do it. And so I'm out. And so maybe Thursday 3 to 5 is not the best time. So that week I see him Wednesday lunchtime, particularly down in Sydney where we do lunchtime witnessing a lot. And I don't meet with him on Thursday from 3 to 5. But see, I have done man-to-man time, and I think we've done the best man-to-man time because we've done it related out to real life. Oh, okay.
It seems that if we do that, and with those other two at the top, pools are lacking, then we're not doing a good job down here, which is what you were just saying, because the two top pools are necessary in order for us to do the right job on the DM. He's got to go someplace to find his disciple.
Right. If we're doing this properly, it has to be done in the context of the ministry of evangelism and follow-up. But what Leroy was referring, what the tendency is, because we're in a spiritual warfare, is that this gets into sort of a passing notes on type of thing.
We're not doing it,
and that's not real discipleship.
That's what I'm saying. So that if they're not all moving, then we better reevaluate because we missed it.
Right. And, of course, evaluate. We need to keep evaluating. Okay, one last question. We'll have our coffee break.
Could you make clear again, what are those dotted lines now?
Right here?
Yeah.
Okay. Forget the dotted lines for just a minute. The man moves in the solid lines. This is one first level of training, then this level of training, then this level of training. Now, when he gets to this level, the solid line means that he's able to carry on all this himself. But he doesn't wait until he arrives at this level of training in order to get new men himself. It's this thing Rich was talking about. that to really make him a disciple, he's got to get back involved up in here and reach guys. And even, hopefully, we want to get him started up in here, even before he becomes a disciple. We want him to be out witnessing and having fellows that he's helping. And this is where, in making an estimate, like, who's going to become your disciple makers? Well, one question I ask, who are the men he's working with? See, just because he's been around the year or so, I can almost guarantee that at the beginning of this school year, which started last month, that if a person doesn't have a couple or three fellows that he's helping, he won't be a disciple maker at the end of the year. Because by the time enough time goes along in the year to get the guy, then he doesn't have enough time left to make a disciple out of him. So I can just say, well, you won't make it this year. Unless you've got, and you need two or three because all of them don't always make it as fast as you'd like for them to. This session we will be talking about evaluating. In the first session, we tried to get an overall perspective of what we'll be discussing during our time together today. And now I want to go into the different parts, and this part particularly to talk about evaluating. Now, when I did this first few times, I'd start with planning. You know, go right down. Do planning, then organizing, leading, then evaluating. And the more I've thought about it, the more I've come to the conclusion that you cannot plan until you've first evaluated. Your planning is based on your evaluation. And even when you're going into taking over somebody else's area, ministry, you remember the starting point, you still have to evaluate and see where you are in that area, who you have, what you have to work with, and do some kind of evaluation before you're in a position to go on and do good planning. So I'd like to sort of skip down here and do evaluating, and then we'll come back and talk about planning and organizing. Now, in evaluating, I'd like to, we'll start here, review performance measuring and compare performance standards. Now, the way you actually do this is that you have to have the standard first. You have to know what you're aiming for in order to know what type of things to measure. Now, the bulk, the heart, you know, the essential core of our Navigator ministry is people. And the type of people that is the heart and core of our ministry, if you wanted to sort of group them or categorize them, you could categorize them into four groups. In other words, our converts, those who are Navigator disciples, in other words, the ones who have sort of finished this stage, our Navigator's disciples, our disciple makers, and then the group that are our leaders. So your performance standard for your area would be what is a reasonable standard for you in terms of production of these people over, say, a one-year period of time. Then your performance measuring is finding out just who do you have in each of those categories. Now, we are doing that. We are doing performance measuring. We call it by such cold names as statistics and various other names. And here again, I suppose just my nature is I rebelled against this a bit because I thought, you know, all these figures, I want to give my life to people. And then it occurred to me that each of those numbers, that was a person. And it really helped to look at this as people. So performance measuring is very important. In PAN, we call it a personnel audit. A personnel audit. And here's my last one I did for Sydney. Now, this is a bit voluminous because it was all the areas. But basically, each area had three pages. The first page was just a numerical personnel audit, just a summary of where we were measuring in these four categories. Now, after we'd worked with numbers a while, we found out that numbers are misleading. They don't tell you the whole story unless you attach the name to it. So we added on pages 2 and 3. Page 2 were all the men, and page 3 all the women. They were just getting started right there. Brand new work. Actually, this year, they've just really gotten started in the girls' ministry at that area. But this was very helpful. Now, in our management here, let me just backtrack on a couple of things that I think would be helpful. First is, how often do you do this? Now, I suggested in our first session that several years ago I was doing this once a year. The matter of, and what is this? This being a time to actually evaluate. Down in Australia, we were doing it once a quarter. Now, the reason we chose quarters is because the university year and our business ministry, we fitted in real well to every quarter because they were on three terms. So we had three school terms and one summer term, one summer quarter. So that fitted in real well. You have to gear it in to your natural divisions in your ministry. But in each division, whatever length of time that division is, I think it's very important for each individual person at the end of that time to have a period of time for prayer and planning. And I think if you're a full-time staff person, that 2 or 3 days is not unrealistic to do this. Now, if you're working at a job, it might be you might need to take a couple of Saturday mornings or something like this to do it. But to have a time of personal prayer and planning, and what you're doing during that time at the end of this quarter is evaluating. So you're doing these four activities. And then after evaluating, you see what really needs to be done, and then you do your planning and perhaps a little bit of organizing. But basically, you're doing your evaluating of the previous 3 months and planning for the next 3 months. And I've found that for our personnel audit, Scotty required it twice a year, every 6 months. And what we found, though, we found it necessary for us to keep up to date. We need to do it every quarter. And just from my experience, I'd say 6 months is an outer limit. 3 months, you wouldn't need to do it any more frequently than that. So I'd say when you're figuring, you're dividing your year, you need to divide it into either somewhere between 3 to 6 month periods. Otherwise, what happens is too long a period of time goes by before you evaluate and you correct. See, if you just do it once a year, you may correct, but the thing is so far off course, you've got so far to bring it back. But what you have to do on this is that, like one region, Bob would need to decide for the whole region, I think, so that everybody's doing it at the same time. Because the other thing we did, you might not, because you have a large staff here, not necessarily do it on a regional-wide basis, but after we had done our personal prayer and planning, then we followed that in a week or so, with a 2 or 3 day staff meeting. And the purpose of our staff meeting was for three things. It was for communication, counsel, and coordination. And basically what we did as a staff, we shared with all the other staff what we'd come up with. And we got on the same wavelength, and particularly in areas that related to all of us, for example, like selecting PARs, that was something that related to all of us, that we got the cross-evaluation all in our staff meeting. And we found it very helpful. We all came prepared, but it was very helpful, and it was one of the most profitable. We really looked forward to getting together. It wasn't like, oh, no, here's this meeting coming up again. And also, we didn't think, oh, I've got to do all those, I've got to get all these reports done for the meeting. Because we were carrying all this information around our notebooks, and we didn't have to have a great big purge to get everything. We just, the rep, all he had to do is just to take a few minutes and just summarize what he already, he had the information, basically. So that was a real help. Now, let me just say, though, we didn't start out that way the first time first staff meeting. It was the third staff meeting that we really got the real blessing, because the first two, more of our discussion was on the mechanics rather than the heart and quality of our evaluation and planning. And it took a couple times to really learn how to do it. So we spent a little bit more time in the first couple meetings just trying, you know, how should we write our objectives and things like that, more the mechanics. But once we got that this last time, the third time, I mean, we spent most of the time really getting in and getting some good time and cross-evaluating and discussing. And I'll share a little bit more on how we did that, particularly when it comes to selecting and evaluating PARs. So even though Scotty only required this, in other words, we only took it to Scotty twice a year, each time we'd come together, we would have it for our own area ministry. And because this is the basis of my evaluation and planning, I can't properly run my area ministry unless I know what I've got. And so this is how it works. Now, when we have this, then the third thing we do is analyze it. We try to take a look at what we have here in terms of our people and try to analyze it and figure out, does our area ministry look healthy or not? Now, something that's helped me just to simplify, this is a very simplified version of how I take a look at an area ministry. But it's a sort of an evaluation pyramid. Now, by having this information, I can do an evaluation. And our ministry should look something like this. Now, these aren't the right proportions, but in general terms, we'd have just a few leaders in our area. We should have some more disciple makers and quite a few more NAV disciples and a whole bunch of converts. Because there's one thing I can tell you for sure is that you don't get disciple makers from down here. Nobody becomes a disciple maker who has not first become a disciple. And if in an area a person has no disciples, I'm going to say you're going to have a gap. There's going to be a period of time you're not going to have any disciple makers, because to become a disciple maker, you have to make disciples. I mean, you have to have people who are disciples, who are making disciples. And also, they can't become disciple makers unless they've got somebody to disciple. And where do they come from? They come from down here. And so, I go into each of the areas, and when I take a look at who they have, I can see what it looks like. Now, of course, because we're in real life, we don't necessarily have the perfect area in terms of evaluating it in our pyramid. And even once we get that, it won't be the next fall because, you know, they've shipped a bunch of the guys off to somewhere else. In other words, our ministry is sort of trying to get it out the way it is, sending people out, you know, reworking it. But what we need to do in terms of analyzing is always to know what it should look like and make sure that the things that we're doing head in that direction. So I'd like to just do a few here and have a little bit of a discussion on how you can do this and take a look at your own area ministry in terms of evaluation. So first, let's just take a little bit of time here and think of your area. And I'd like for you to write down, just, you know, up in the corner there, how many people you have in each of these four categories. In other words, how many converts do you have? How many NAV disciples? How many disciple makers? And in most areas, this might be just one. In other words, you. This would be you in a lot of areas. So just jot that down. You may not have the accurate figure here, but just you know, get a rough estimate.
By way of converts, now, Marv, do you mean like, say, since like the last, when school started, or you Where should the...
Okay, converts here, because the purpose of this is to see how many converts we have. In other words, they're our source of becoming NAV disciples. This would be anybody who's become a convert, you know, anytime, and who is now actively involved in our ministry, who has not yet become a disciple. Now, also, one other thing, just by way of clarification, all of our NAV disciples don't come just from our converts. You know, occasionally we meet a Christian, and they become a NAV disciple. But the purpose of doing this, now, actually, what I do in analyzing, this is only a first step. This is not a complete analysis. In other words, this is just a very simple first step. And the reason I do just converts is make sure the area is doing what Leroy is talking about. You know, we're still out doing the evangelism. Because I know that Franklin, Ray, and all these, they've got Christians that they're going to make disciples. Now, my second step of evaluation is to go in and find out how many Christians they have, you know, in this category. And also, not only how many disciples they have, my step two is to find out how many of those are just about to become disciple makers. It's one thing to have them around. It's another thing for them to be making progress to the next step, you see. That's a more detailed. So we're just starting out, you know, the first step, and then you go into it deeper.
When you evaluate your ministry, do you separate the men from the women?
Yes, right. Otherwise, it doesn't give you a true picture. See, because... you might have a whole lot of converts, and what really happens is the girls are doing a terrific thing, but the guys aren't doing anything. So I do separate it out.
Mm-hmm. It's possible, isn't it, to get disciples that come into your area, and that doesn't give you a true picture either, does it?
Well, in our audit here, the way we work it out is that we put down, we have produced or acquired, in other words, our gain, either produced by us or acquired from outside. And then what we do is that we have sort of a summary of everything that we started that period with, then all of our intake, produced or acquired, then all of our outgo, transferred or lost, and then what we ended up with. And that putting all that together does tell us. But that gets in more of the detail. You know, that's a second or third step of the analysis, but it is a very significant part of the analysis. Otherwise, you could be just bringing people in, nothing's happening. Another step three or four on down the line is, even though it may not measure up, is why doesn't it? And it could be you might not have anybody in here, but it could be the man's only been there 6 months, brand new area, well... That's reasonable. See, so you start asking, you know, why did this happen and all, but it's very revealing. As a matter of fact, I learned a lot just from this very simple first step, because you go into an area, it might look like, you know, your pyramid looks something like that. So, well, then what does that tell you? It tells you that in terms of objectives, in terms of your planning, you really got to do something down here, you see. Okay. Yes.
Having it looking like that isn't necessarily bad if you know exactly why it looks like that.
Oh, no. And like I say, in any area, probably, you know, it may never look like this. But the purpose is not is to know what it should look like and make sure that things you're doing are in the direction to get it to look like this. So it's not bad for it to look like this. See, what this might look like, this might be a three-month-old area where a leader brought in two or three disciple makers who'd gotten out of service, and they've just gotten, you know, started. You know, they've cultivated some friendships and all, but they haven't seen much happen yet. Well, that's not bad if what they're doing with the bulk of their time, because it's a brand-new area, is out witnessing. But if they're holding seminars for the Christians on campus... See, then I know that they're not going to correct this. So that's, in answering the question, why is it this way, gives you a clue whether it helps you in the quality of your planning and your objectives up here. Now, let's take an area. Who wants to be, let's take a simple area. You know, some of you like have these complex areas like Paul Drake and Bill Greenaway and all. We don't want to get in that. But let's just take one simpler.
Or would you rather take an area?
Oh, let's just take an area because that's more like where we operate. Just let's take Davis, John Carroll Davis, okay? Okay, now.
The lamb left to be slaughtered.
Okay.
Plus, I can figure it. I've got one.
Well, okay, wait a minute. Let me give me a worksheet here. Okay.
We don't have a profile for an LDM out here.
Okay, for an LDM, yeah, on that, let's just call that person for right now in these single areas. That would be just whoever the leader of the area is. Like, that would be John. There'd be one of them. And actually, that category really would be more of these guys. So in most of the, you know, the standard simple area, it'd be just the one person who's leading it. It's when you get up like Bill Greenaway and all, you'd have several of these. Or like when you evaluate the region, you'd have them. Okay. Okay, you have, we'll just take these four. We'll put a number. You've got you.
Yeah.
And we're just doing the men, by the way. We'll do the men.
Okay. I have two DMs.
Two DMs.
And 10 disciples.
10 disciples.
And that, well, that includes probably about 3 that were acquired.
Okay, we won't worry about that. Just what you actually have with
and
you.
And on converts, we have, okay, here I think I probably have about 4 or 5 guys this year. And we've picked up some Christians. So in that category altogether, we probably have about 10 guys.
Okay, let's separate the converts from the Christians. How many converts?
Probably
4. 4. Plus how many Christians? 6. Hmm?
Something like that.
Okay, for the converts. So this is what it sort of looked like, you know, if you try to, you know, 2, you go down to 10, back to 4. Just about to take off. My analysis of Davis is it's just about to take off. Okay, so then when you get that, then you can start asking yourself, okay, what do I need to really major on? Now, keep in mind, when we talk about majoring on, you don't major on something to the exclusion of all the other. And that's a very common tendency, is to start majoring on something and exclude the other. Okay, so, see, it becomes pretty obvious. Now, then you say, why? Now, it could be, see, then you ask yourself, you know, you go back up here to your last quarter, say. See, right now we're, you know, 2 or 3 days with time alone with the Lord at the end of this quarter. You know, say our first quarter. That's what we're doing. We're doing our evaluation. So then you say, well, what were the activities that I had down for my last quarter? And you look at them and you had training seminars and rallies and you took the team out preaching at churches and various things. And you say, well, I see why. You know, I don't have very many converts. You know, our activities have been geared for the Christians. So what do you do for the next quarter? Well, it keeps you on what, you know, you make sure you get some good evangelism things. On the other hand, you may say, well, boy, we had a lot of, you know, boy, a lot of witnessing activities down. Then you say, well, then you start asking yourself other questions. Did we actually do those activities we had down on paper? You might say, yes. But then you might say, well, who were the guys who were doing the witnessing? How was the quality of their witnessing? Do they know how to effectively present the gospel? You know, you've got 10 disciples, 12. So you've got quite a few here. Then you've got, well, how well? So you go back then to each of these men and figure out how effective are they in actual witnessing. And then you ask yourself, have I been out personally with all 12 of these guys to see how effective they are in presenting the gospel? Then you might say, oh, well, you know, about half and half. 6 are real good and 6 aren't so good. Then you formulate, you know, are these 6 guys who aren't so good getting help in becoming more proficient? That's where training objectives come in. See, then you have a basis of formulating some specific training objectives. And then what happens then, all your man-to-man and training, you have a reason for doing what you're doing. It's not like, oh, I've got to do man-to-man. Let's see, I'll do that this week. I just read a good book. You know, we'll talk about that this week. You know, it's not just random potluck, but you have a definite reason of what you're doing with people and where you're going, and you have a basis of doing what you're doing. And on the other hand, you might say, we've been doing it and everything. They've been out. They know how to present the gospel, and we just haven't seen it. But what do you say there? Well, you trust God and say, we'll just keep doing more of the same. We know they'll come with time later. Because what could happen, see, this might be the first 3 months of the year, and what's happened, even though you've only got four converts, there might be 50. You know, these 12 men might have four good non-Christian contacts. They've been cultivating them in friendships, and they've been doing evangelistic Bible study for 2 months with most of them. Well, then you know, okay, you'll probably get quite a few converts the next quarter or two.
I had that situation once when I was running an area marv and discovered that we were just not getting converts, or we were just nobody getting saved. We were doing everything we knew to do. So I just called a state of emergency and got everybody majoring on prayer. And recruiting prayer from churches. And I got, you know, lots of churches praying for one thing, converts on that base.
Mm-hmm.
It was like an Air Force base, as a matter of fact. And we had people mobilized to pray for that thing. Then we began to see converts.
Okay, see what you've just done, to try to put it all in perspective, you evaluated. You found that you were weak here. You analyzed. You found out why. It wasn't because you weren't with... See, and your objective was to get converts, you see. Or your objective should be in line with each of these four things. I mean, a heart, there's other objectives, but those four things have to be there. Then activities. Then you start figuring out, okay, what kind of activity? Okay, the witness, you've been doing that and all. So then you come up and pray and you think of, I've got to get some prayer support rallied. You come up with an activity you wouldn't, say, normally have done. And what happens? You end up getting converts. And that gets it in the right order, though. But what this does then is basically just gives you something to sort of look at and gives you a basis of asking intelligent questions in terms of evaluating your ministry. And of course, I like this kind of thing, so you know I approach it from a lot of different directions. And then when I go around to the staff, then I say, well, what am I going to do when I see these guys? Well, I don't have to say, well, you know, how'd things go last week, or just, you know, casual talk. You know, you do that. But then I've got some specific things I'm asking, things I've been thinking about, I can ask them about. You know, how many guys do you have who you think will become disciple makers in the next 3 months? Who are the men they're working with? How far along are they? What's the problem? Let me say one other thing that sort of relates a little bit to this, sort of indirectly, but I think is very important. The heart of what we're trying to do in the Navigators is develop people. Management, defined, Bob Blakey told us down at Palm Springs that management is developing people. Didn't he say that? Or another way it stated sometimes is getting things done through people. But the heart of management is people. And developing them so that they are able to perform the thing that needs to be performed. And in this case, the thing that's being performed is disciple-making. So that's the heart of it, developing people in terms of disciple-making. Now, I've traveled around a bit, and it's very interesting. It's very helpful. But in this matter of developing people, just overall, I've come up with that there are three aspects of this that we need to sort of keep in mind of how a person is developed. A person needs a certain amount of knowledge, just the facts. And he also needs experience. He needs just the ability to go out and put those facts into practice, that experience. Like if he's going to be a disciple maker, he needs to know the know-how of disciple making. But also he needs to just get out and actually try to make disciples. But there's a third element that seems to me to be very important, and that is, he needs to, it's not, there's knowledge and then there's experience, but it's also observation. And that is for the man to observe another man making disciples. putting it into practice. And actually, I think that one goes up in between those, that one. Now, we do this at a certain level of our ministry. Take witnessing. What do? We give a person, we get him aside in a workshop or man-to-man, and what? We show him how to do the bridge illustration. We get him to write out his testimony and practice it, you know, the know-how. Then what do? We say, come along with me. We'll go out to the barracks. I knock on the door, and he just tags along. What does he do? He observes me doing that. And after a while, we say, well, why don't you do it? What's he getting? Observation. And then after a while, what happens? We say, okay, you knock on the door. You do the whole bit. What's happening? He's getting experience. See, knowledge, observation, experience. So we do this, and I think we do it very strongly down here in the grassroots level. And one thing just that's been stimulating to my thinking, I'm still working on, but just throw out how some of these things are important principles of developing men and trying to keep all these things going. See, I see that very strong here. But some of the areas I've been to, when it comes to a man becoming a contact point, I see, I know there was one fellow I met who is not a contact point. His heart, it seems like, you know, he'd like to be a contact point. He'd like to be at the Navigators, but something's holding him back. And so I talked to him about, well, what is it that's holding you back? He says, well, I've been to summer training programs. I've been, you know, for the last 4 or 5 years, and I've gotten a lot of know-how. You know, I've got the notes and the manuals, and, you know, I've got a lot of stuff. And he says, I've gotten a lot of experience. I've sort of been out on my own for 2 or 3 years, and, you know, I've had opportunity to get experience. But see, as I looked at it, there's one thing missing. He's never been in a situation where he's observed a qualified representative. You know, the guy who's qualified to do it, you know, run the ministry. He's never been in a situation to see him do it. You know, the observation. Well, I don't see what's the big, there's no problem with that, except, see, when you're evaluating, if you can think that way, then you pinpoint it, then what do? Then you pinpoint, why isn't he a contact point? His big need then may be to observe a fully qualified representative actually doing the area ministry. And then your activity, what do? Well, that determines then whether he moves to this area or goes here or does this or what situation he's in. Now, it doesn't bother me, for example, that that's the case. But the thing that bothered me was the fact that it didn't look to me like anybody had identified that, because the situation he was in, he still wasn't observing a rep doing the ministry. He was having a good ministry. In other words, he had a good team, a good ministry. But my thought was he could still do that for a couple of years and they'd still say he doesn't have quite what it takes to be a contact point, because he wasn't doing the thing that was most needed to meet that. So the thing that we're strong on here, sometimes we overlook later on down here. Okay, any other questions?
Well, Amar, then if a man wants to come into your area and you know that he is a disciple maker because he has produced disciples at the other area, but when he comes into your area, then do you not assume anything and then say when he... You say, okay, now you take these three little dorms over here, something like that, but you take him with him so that he can observe and you can observe. You don't assume anything.
Well, let me try to explain, make a couple comments and see if this answers your question. In having these training objectives and all, usually in these first three categories, the person stays in the same area. Or about in here. It's later on here where he starts moving around, with the exception of summer training programs. And what we've been trying to do is by working on training objectives with the man, and knowing that this is his need, is that even if he moves out of my area for the summer, that these are the training objectives that he needs to fulfill during the summer to keep him progressing in his growth and maturity. And so I get with the training program director or something like this and make sure that he's going to be doing those training objectives to try to get him into that situation. Now, if he moves to another area, we try to pass on so that if he comes to your area, he doesn't go back down here and start all over again, but that you can continue building in the areas of need that the person has learned for 2 or 3, 4 years before. Now, having said that we still keep going on, we still don't take anything for granted. And that is, we go around and observe and keep checking back on all these things, whether he's still up on all this. And this is where a lot of the man-to-man time then becomes involvement in the real-life ministry, because that's the way you can tell whether the person is really doing it or not. And the way this works is 2 Timothy 2:2 again, looked at it another way. It's something like this. Paul, Timothy, faithful men, others also. Whereas Paul got Timothy, right? Paul said, okay, Timothy, you get what? Some faithful men who will be able to teach others also. This. Now, this is another thing that happened, I've learned in the last couple of years, that the interpretation of this when I went to Sydney was this. And yet, as I looked around and evaluated the area of ministry, I felt there was something missing. And what I discovered was missing was that this man was teaching this man, and this man had a man that he was teaching. But what was happening was that this man, he was giving input to this man. But because all the teams and organization was lined up on a very straight, you know, one, two, right down the line, this man did not have contact with this man. And I came to the conclusion that you not only need this, this, and this, but you also periodically need a little bit of this. And what that means is, for example, I said I went over to Merv Chan's. We'll carry on with Merv Chan. Okay, so I went over to Merv Chan. I'm helping Merv Chan in certain areas of the area ministry. But when I went out into Merv Chan's area, I didn't want to just see Merv. I also spent personal time out in the ministry with the key men that Merv was helping. So I spent time in the ministry with these men. Now what that did was tell me not what I was putting into Merv, but by seeing them, I was seeing what was coming out from Merv. I was in one area not too long ago, and the area rep was talking about one of his team leaders. And he said he is still learning how to do sort of man-to-man in getting his men really coming along and growing in discipleship. And then he made this comment. He said, I can't understand why. He says he just caught on the last couple weeks, and he says, I can't understand why. He says, I went over that stuff with him a year ago. You know what went through my mind? Well, if he'd been out with that guy and meeting some of his men 11 months ago, he would have known that he wasn't putting it, you know, he hadn't gotten it working out. Now what happened is enough time went by that he found that out, you see. So then he took corrective action. But being involved with his ministry, he would have seen that, you know, sooner. And he would have saved 6 months or so. And that's another reason why I advocate not doing this evaluation once a year, but doing it more like every 3 or 4 months, because when you do your analysis and correction, you don't get so far off. Like, for example, you may be doing the right thing, but see, maybe you should have called in that prayer support, you know, at the end of 3 months rather than at the end of 12 months. That's the idea there. And once you get sort of this framework and learn how to use it, it's not all that hard, you know. I mean, it's not that big a burden.
On the Chuck's question, I think another answer to that, Chuck, is that if we have cross-evaluation of men, and we have performance standards, and we have training objectives, when the guy shows up, it will not be that nebulous thing where I look at the guy and say, well, it's obvious he's had no training because he doesn't wear the right color shoes, or he doesn't know how to handle a fork at the table, or he doesn't know how to do this particular tick in the ministry. In other words, each of us have something that we kind of hold on as kind of our little God and kind of precious. And if a guy doesn't get that, then we say, what's happened to his background? Why hasn't he been trained? You know? Well, we can correct that now if we go into the training objectives and have those clear and everybody's agreed upon them. You know, I mean, we know what we're doing there. Performance standards and cross-evaluation, we can keep at the heart of the matter, and then each of us can put our own little thing, you know, in addition, you know, kind of the cherry on the top of the thing. But when we take nothing for granted, often that means we're not quite sure what's there. And so then we have to get our own poke around, and if he doesn't have my little, you know, thought pattern, then we have to start from scratch and build all over again. So I think that's where this business that that Bob is working on here in the region, the training objectives and all that, that's where it's going to be helpful in keeping that going.
Okay, let's... Yes.
That four group now, where do they come in? In conferences and so forth?
This group?
Now, how would that leader get in touch?
Which group are you talking about
where
here?
You have Paul getting in touch with others also.
Oh, well, then, yes. And then I also, well, of course, this person has responsibility this way. But then also, occasionally, like, say, I went over to MERS area, I may get personal time and all with his key men. But the other ones they're sort of working with and coming around, well, you know, at the rally or something, I try to get 5 minutes with them. I also take a little bit of time and take a look at that. But so I put major on that, regularly on that, and just a little bit on that. So it gives me a feel if it's also filtering on down the line. And, you know, by doing that, you may observe something, come up with something that will be a symptom of a need in the overall area ministry, then that you can make a contribution and help Merv with, or with area leader and his team leaders. Okay, Gene?
Also, other than just looking at it from an evaluation point of view and helping these different stages, you need to also kind of speak the people or from the word. Like, don't you feel like Paul needs to not only teach Timothy, but he should have periodically times when he can just say, feed some of Timothy's men, you know, that kind of a thing, so that he can have a little part.
Oh, yes, right. And in this, I'm not trying to go into all the aspects of the ministry. And I think Jack, you know, in the man-to-man sessions, will get into more of all you do and the different aspects of what you do with the men and all. And I'm just trying to give an overall framework. And that's one thing. It's very true that you do want to make sure you're sharing your life, sharing the word, being in prayer with the guys. Bill?
On John's illustration there, the four and the six, the six converts, they're really, we're not considering in that the top illustration on the right there, you know, it's like a top. But if those six are really gung-ho, or three out of the six, they may win 30 in each quarter. So that line can kind of come down in an imaginary way straight down off that 10, because those six are going to contribute as well as those four, you know.
Yes, right. And I do look at it that way, you know, as a second step in evaluation. I used to start out putting them together, but I found out that what would happen, it wouldn't give me a clear picture of what Leroy's talking about. How is evangelism going? But I do that as a second step because these do make a significant contribution to our ministry. Now let's, having done our evaluation now, let's do our planning. So we'll move on to part three, planning and organizing. Now, in preparation for our planning, before we really get into it, these are some of the things that I feel we need to have clearly in our mind in order to do a good job in our planning. The first thing is just time to plan. And the reason I say that is I've talked to quite a few people that say, well, it's a good idea, but I just don't have time to do it. Well, if you've worked out your timetable and put in the time, you do have the time to plan. And then the second thing is, because we're with the navigators, is to know the nav objective. Now, and there's two parts to the nav objective, possibly three parts, that you need to have clearly in mind. In other words, you need to know first the overall primary aim of the navigators, just as an organization. Now, all of us, you know, we're not, you know, sort of familiar with it, but have it as part of our fiber. You know, that's the thing we're majoring on. And then also the overall corporate objectives of the navigators. In other words, what are the navigators trying to do in the 1970s? Because the planning that we do, our objectives have to be in line with the overall thrust of what we're doing. And it could be that you can even break it down to the Western Division and even your region. So, for example, Leroy has in mind that in the Western Division you need to have so many PARs or produce so many reps, say. Well, where are they going to come from? They come from these areas somewhere. So that area person has to be thinking. Some area person has to be thinking in terms of a person who's going to become a rep. Or a disciple maker. See, we can disciple makers. Okay? But having in mind what the overall objectives are. Third, here again, is your job description. Knowing clearly what your job is. One of the reps down in Sydney, he had his ministry on one of the campuses, and he was invited to go over here and do this and do this. He thought, boy, I'm a navigator. I need to keep harmony with these people and all. But that was not in his job description. He did not have to do that. As a matter of fact, from my point of view, I want to make sure he spent his whole work week, as it were, doing his job. And if he had time to fit that in on his spare time, okay. But if he was roaring around speaking at these churches and these meetings and all that, that's nice. But that's not his job. That's just taking time away from his job. And I know that he won't have disciples and disciple makers produced. Because he's been running around. Now, maybe at a certain level, that might be part of his...